We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Appreciate you joining me on this Wednesday afternoon. Normally, Walker's with you on Wednesday, but we're giving you a full dose this week, and thrilled to be with you for the third day in a row, which is unusual. But I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. Thanks for all the calls yesterday and for just putting up with my rants. And I ranted yesterday about a topic from the Supreme Court, a case that they just handed down that just on its face, in my, I don't even see how we can misinterpret this clause in the Constitution, two of them actually, but it happens. It happens, and it's why we say in all of our Constitution classes, we don't live under the Constitution, we live under the Courtstitution, and the only way to right the ship and turn that around in the long run is to overrule federal overreach, and the states have to do that. They have the power to do that. And we talk about it on the program all the time, but the ultimate weapon in the toolbox is, it's right there in Article 5, given to us by Colonel George Mason right at the end of the convention, unanimous vote, and it's called Convention of States. And it's an ability for the states to come together and essentially overrule the federal government through amendments to the Constitution. And my good friend, my brother from another mother, my brother in Christ, and I'm telling you, an incredible warrior for truth, is the master on this, both at grassroots building, but also on how to get this done in our nation. And that may or may not be where we go with our topic today, because we want to get specifically into this Moore v. Harper case that I was ranting about yesterday. When I actually have to know what I'm talking about on a Supreme Court case, I call Mark Meckler. So Mark's with us. Mark, hey, man, thanks for coming on, brother.
You're making me laugh. If you're calling me for advice on the Supreme Court, you're lost, brother.
Hey, I love you, man. Thanks so much for giving me some time this afternoon, and thanks for what you're doing. I know you're all over the country. You're the only guy I know that flies more than I do and hits more states in a week than I do, and I don't know how you do it, but I think you're – where are you, North Carolina today?
Yeah, I just walked out of the North Carolina legislature meeting with a bunch of great grassroots folks. We had a rally here on the lawn in the Capitol complex and met with a bunch of legislators. We've passed the House of Representatives here. We're pending in the Senate, kind of the usual political shenanigans, but this is what you got to do when you got to do it. And by the way, I got to tell you, I just had lunch with a bunch of grassroots. A bunch of them came up to me and said, man, tell Rick Green we love him. So aww. I hear that everywhere I go.
Well, right back at them, man. I remember doing a rally out there. What was that, last fall maybe, or last summer? It was hot. Fall, I remember yep. It was hot. Yeah, so it must have been last summer. But yep. Great folks there in North Carolina, and thrilled that we got movement happening there. So thanks for all you're doing, man. And I guess actually before we get into Moore v. Harper, just a quick update from you on Convention of States and this effort to restore federalism. And let's start there. What does that mean to you? When we say restore federalism, you're the one that has taught me so much about the only way this thing's going to work is if we let states be different. So what is it that you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I think this is really important, Rick. Historically, I think we have a misimpression of the United States as some place where we all just get along harmoniously. The colonies all got along. After the Revolution, we all got along. The truth is we've been at each other's throats for the entire history of our country. And part of that's just a function of geography. You've got such a huge country and, you know, coast to coast, thousands of miles, different regions, different states. People came from different places, so different cultures developed. That's our strength. I love that the difference of ideas and cultures all coming together in what we call the cultural melting pot. But the thing that's made that all work, the glue that made it stick together, was federalism. And federalism is this idea that there's a limited amount of things we've got to do together in a federal government because the world has existential threats and we need to stand shoulder to shoulder and face those off. There's certain things internally we can only do together, like build an interstate highway system, or you've got a system of air traffic control that's nationwide. We have to do that stuff together. But originally what the framers believed was everything else gets left to the states and to the people. And so the idea was...
And that, Mark, just a summary of those things, right, would just be, like you just said, it's basically war, commerce,
yep.
and travel. I mean, that's kind of the three big categories. There's things you've got to do among, you know, all 50 states got to work together on those things. But, you know, pretty much other than that, leave it up to the states.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to summarize it. And look, the important thing was if you do that, then that means I can live in a country with people maybe in California who I can't relate to. I really don't like. But it's not a problem because they're not imposing their views on me and I'm not imposing my views on them from Texas or North Carolina. This started to break down because we started to believe in this one-size-fits-all government, everything from Washington, D.C. out. And so the goal of Convention of States is call a convention and answer the question, who decides, mostly with the answer, we the people in the states decide. So we're trying to rebalance. You talk about this a lot, Rick. I know jurisdiction. What's the proper jurisdiction of the federal government? What's the proper jurisdiction of the individual? What's the proper jurisdiction of the states?
You know, the folks out there that listen every day, Mark, are going to be saying, well, Mark must have listened to Rick's program yesterday because, and I know you didn't because you were traveling, I harped a lot on this this question of who decides, who has the power, who has the jurisdiction. And folks, you got to understand, Mark and I have a lot of mutual friends and mentors and people that influence our life. And we have a good friend that gives a great speech, and he gave it at Patriot Academy like 6 or 7 years ago, and I'll never forget it. That's where it really sunk in for me how simplistic this is. Who decides? That's the question. Two words. That's what we should ask, and now I teach that at Patriot Academy every time. Who decides? That's the question to ask with every piece of legislation, every activity that you're making, and that's essentially what you're saying, Mark, is, okay, who gets to decide on these issues? And the one today that we're going to talk about is who gets to decide how the elections work in a state. And unfortunately, the founders were so confusing in the way that they said this in the Constitution. In Article 1 and Article 2 both, they say it shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. I mean, that's so confusing, you know, by the legislature thereof. I'm sure what people hear when they hear legislature thereof is they hear governor, Supreme Court, Secretary of State, maybe the federal Congress. How about the United States Supreme Court? They hear all of that. But legislature thereof, okay, that's pretty clear, Mark. How in the world did we get so far away from that?
Yeah, look, you know, I think you get layer of interpretation. I think ultimately what the Supreme Court said here, and I don't agree with them, but they said anytime you're talking about the state legislature, that legislature is still bound by the laws passed by that legislature, by the constitution of that state. And so then suddenly that means you have state court review. So this is a fight. I don't know how much you talked about it yesterday, but the theory posited by the state legislature was one called the independent state legislature theory, meaning they get to act independently of those other things because it specifically says that in the Constitution. The Supreme Court said, no, yeah, you're still bound by your Constitution, and that means that the courts get to weigh in, and that's the problem that we've got here. The courts weighed in, and now the Supreme Court has weighed in.
And Mark, here's one thing you can correct me on, because I think I got this wrong. And I normally when I go talk about some of these Supreme Court decisions, I actually read them. I really do. I didn't have time in this case yesterday when I started harping about this. I keep saying harping because it's a good pun, because the case is called Moore v. Harper. But anyway, I thought I was looking at it entirely from a state to federal power, that they were stripping it from the states and federal decisions were going to make this. It sounds like it's really more of a branch shift from legislature to state Supreme Court, from state legislature to state courts being able to overrule and decide based on, in an ideal world, based on the state constitution, which I could connect those dots and maybe agree to that to some point. But the problem is we let courts get way beyond with their interpretation. They actually end up rewriting instead of it being the legislature. So anyway, all of that to say, am I saying that right, that it's really more of a state shift from legislature to the courts than it is a from state to federal in this particular case?
Yeah, that's correct. In this particular case, what they're saying is the legislature was taking the position. And again, I think this is actually arguable. I'm not as outraged by the decision. I'm outraged by the result, but I'm not as outraged by the decision as some others are. What they were saying is, look, a state legislature still has to act in accordance with its own constitution. And generally, who determines that? Well, that's the state courts, right? And ultimately, depending on how the courts lay out in a given state, it's ultimately generally the state Supreme Court.
Well, and an example of where that goes awry would be Pennsylvania in 2020, right, where the state Supreme Court and the governor and the Secretary of State rewrote election law without the legislature involved. And, of course, they used some sort of constitutional, you know, excuse, right? They made it, they tried to couch it in those terms, and they literally rewrote election law and changed election law, which is why I always say, you know, they stole the election, but it's not the Dominion stuff is not where they stole it. They stole it right in front of us by changing the way that the election was going to work and favoring the Democrats over the Republicans and with the voting apparatus and all that. But that would be an example of why we stand against this decision and against this whole idea of taking away the state reps and state senators' power. Why do you have, not that neither of us have faith in any politician, but why would you rather the power be vested with state legislators? What is it about state reps and state senators that's the place we would rather the decisions be made? Because none of us are happy with any of our state legislatures, but it's kind of like Madison said, it's the worst form of government other than every other one, right? I mean, these are, you know, it's just better than federal Congress or the courts.
Yeah, for me, the reason is simple proximity to their constituents. So, you know, I'm here in North Carolina right now, meeting with a bunch of senators and reps, and they live with those people, and they hang out with those people. Here in North Carolina, their annual salary is like $13,900. Every one of these men and women has a career back at home. Maybe they're retired, but they generally have careers, businesses, they're teachers, they're contractors. I met with a guy today that was a real estate broker. And so when they go home in their communities, they're just regular folks in their communities. They're in their legislature part-time, so they are close to the people that they are governing. And I think that's really critical. The second part of that is it's a lot easier to throw out a state rep or a state senator than it is a congressman or a judge. Now, it depends. In some cases, the judiciary is elected in the states. It just depends on the state. But I'm a fan of having elected officials who are close to their constituents. I think we can exert a lot more pressure on them, both negative and positive.
Love it. And not only is Mark Meckler a fan of that, the Founding Fathers were fans of that, which is why they empowered the state reps and state senators to have the final say on even federal law by using the amendment process. Mark, I so appreciate you, man. I'm down to about a minute here before the break, and I would love to keep you over, but I know you've got to get to some other committee meetings and meetings there in North Carolina. So please come back and when you're home, and let's get you back on the show again, because I'd like to dive into the process of a convention of states, where we are, and just a quick summary for everybody. Is it still, it's 19 that have called for it, and we need 34, so we need 15 more, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We could actually say it's 20. Kansas passed with a simple majority. They have a constitutional requirement in their state constitution that requires a two-thirds majority. That's unconstitutional under the Supremacy Clause. A state constitution can't limit the exercise of a federal constitutional right. So we'll be litigating that shortly, and I expect that'll go on the board as number 20.
All right. So 20 down, 14 to go. And we'll talk more about what happens after that and how a convention would work. And then after a convention, it's got to go back to all the states and be ratified by 38. So it's not like you're going to have some crazy convention and all of a sudden the Constitution has changed. It's got to be ratified by 38 states. Mark, I know you're all over the place. I'm going to ask all of our listeners to be praying for you and Patty and for your whole team at Convention of States. You've got an amazing team, incredible people on your staff, like this kid named Reagan Green, who I might be related to, and Faith Green, who I also might be related to. Anyway, we just love what you're doing, man, and we want people to be praying for y'all. You're doing the Lord's work, not just on this, you know, specific issue, but on so many other things. So thank you, brother. God bless you, man.
Thank you. God bless you and the whole family.
That's Mark Meckler. The website is conventionofstates.com, conventionofstates.com. And by the way, you can sign up to help. Everybody should sign up to help. You can click on your state there. You can see what's happening in your particular state. And even if your state has already called for a convention, the organization within that state is incredible. You're going to get great fellowship with incredible people. You're going to get the opportunity to learn more about the Constitution. They do all of our Constitution classes in Convention of States. They use our Patriot Academy materials for that. But you'll just get to network with some amazing people and they're ready for like whatever the issue might be. They're the best, most effective grassroots organization so that they can immediately pounce when there's something going on in the legislature or whatever else it might be. So great, great group to be involved with. And I really appreciate Mark coming on to talk about it. ConventionofStates.com, ConventionofStates.com. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. We'll be back in just a moment.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core. Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with us this afternoon, and thanks to Mark Meckler for joining us in the first segment. We'll have to do a whole program with him. There's so much we can cover. He's actually in. I mentioned that they share our Constitution classes throughout the Convention of States organization, which is about 5 million people strong, by the way. It is literally the largest grassroots organization in America. But Mark's actually in the Constitution class. We filmed at Independence Hall together a couple of years ago. Wow, might have even been 3 years ago. Time is flying. Anyway, we filmed there in Independence Hall to teach about this particular part of the Constitution, how it came about, the debates that took place at the Constitutional Convention and ratification conventions and all that. And so Mark actually teaches in our Constitution class on this particular topic, and it's really, really good stuff. And as you can tell from that segment, I have a great time with Mark. I enjoy the banter back and forth with him. He really is a brother from another mother, and we just hit it off. We had heard about each other for years. You know, people would tell us, you need to know Mark Meckler, or tell him, you need to know Rick Green, y'all need to be working together. But it wasn't until about 3 years ago that that we finally met. And, man, I'm telling you, it was like Jonathan and David. I mean, it was immediate. Like, we are fellow warriors in the cause, on the same page. Normally, you know, I meet somebody in this kind of world of you know, influencing government and influencing the culture and that sort of thing, and we'll agree on a lot, but definitely have a lot we disagree on. With Mark, man, I can't hardly. I mean, it literally is. It's like brothers from another mother. We agree on almost everything. So anyway, great guy and great organization. Again, conventionofstates.com is the website, and it's easy to get involved. Click on your state, sign up, and let them know you want to volunteer. I mean, that's one of the big things, is helping to educate people on this issue, because that's the key. I mean, that's what it's going to take. Is I say it all the time: the petri dish for bad government is civic ignorance, civic and biblical ignorance. That's where bad government grows. So if you have if you have a neighborhood, a state, a nation where civics is not taught, where the Bible is not taught, so you don't have good biblical worldview, in other words, you're not seeing God's law on how things work, so then you're ignorant. And I don't mean that as an insult. I'm ignorant about a lot of things, but you're ignorant about how the laws of nature and nature's God work. You don't know what the good inputs are or the bad inputs that produce bad results. You just don't know. That's civic and biblical ignorance. You don't know truth, so you fall for the lie. I mean, that's why we're in the mess we're in. So the solution is to solve the ignorance. And ignorance is curable. That's the good news. You can solve your ignorance. I can solve my ignorance about virtually anything, right? If there's a subject you don't know anything about, you can spend 30 minutes doing research now and have access to every library in the world, have access to virtually every author in history, every study, everything. You can go get it if you're willing to dig, if you're willing to spend just a little bit of time on those things. The Constitution, history, the Bible, same thing. You can solve ignorance about those things by just simply spending some time in them. And that's why we do what we do at Patriot Academy. That's why we do what we do at conventionofstates.com. It's why we do what we do here at American Family Radio. We're literally educating people. We're solving biblical and civic ignorance. And so if you take one of our Constitution classes, you'll begin to study how these things work, and then help other people learn that as well. Because in an ignorant state of mind, we tend to just be negative. We tend to just be no on whatever it is. And that's probably the right thing to do, right? If you don't know whether or not something's going to be good or bad or healthy or whatever, you stay away from it. You say no to it. And I was that way about Convention of States. I was like, you know, 15 years ago, you told me about some concept of amending the Constitution at some big conference that state legislators are going to get together and do, I would be like, no way, man. I'm not putting the Constitution in their hands. Because I was ignorant. I didn't understand that's nothing more than a suggestion conference, convention, whatever term you want to use. It's just a chance for legislators to come together, have a big meeting, and suggest changes to the Constitution that would correct abuses to the Constitution, which is what you're really doing. You're not changing the Constitution to be something different from what the founders intended. You're restoring what the Constitution was intended to do and actually still says. But you're restoring that by overruling Supreme Court decisions that have completely distorted and changed what the Constitution actually says. So at this convention, all these state legislators, every state would be represented, and all these state reps would debate for weeks and weeks, maybe months and months, and they would iron out language to a suggested amendment to overrule a particular Supreme Court decision on a particular issue, or overrule an act of Congress to say that the federal government decided to do whatever. Let's say, I don't know, let's say they finally get their way and they ban assault rifles. They ban the most popular rifle in America, the AR-15, whatever it is. They do something, you know, ignorant like that. Well, at this convention, you can have a proposed amendment to clarify the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment clearly says that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So it's the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's crystal clear, but yet you have Supreme Court decisions that have distorted that, and you have acts of Congress that distort that. And so through a suggested amendment, you could clarify. And you could say, I'm literally pulling this out of my head because I haven't actually, thought about an amendment to the second. I'd rather that not even be touched, honestly, because it's already so clear. So probably you wouldn't get ratification on an amendment like this because you got to get 38 states to say yes. But let's say you did clarify and you said this means there shall be no limitation on the right of people to keep and bear the handgun or rifle of their choice. Whatever that may be. And that should include automatic rifles, folks. That should include fully automatic rifles. Now, you may think I'm crazy in saying that, but I know the data. And I know that every license that's been given, I think there's something like 30,000 of them, for automatic rifles in this country has not resulted in a mass murder event. In other words, it's never been used for a mass murder event. So those are not the problem, even though that's what people tend to think, okay? But anyways, whatever your amendment, let's get back to the process. Whatever that amendment might be that this conference comes up with, one of the ones that I really want them to come up with and do, and is suggested by Mark Levin and others, is an amendment to overrule all the Supreme Court decisions with regard to the Commerce Clause. So the Commerce Clause is very specific language in the Constitution that gives the federal government the ability to make regular commerce that crosses state lines. It's kind of like what Mark and I were talking about. Those three main things that the federal government's allowed to do is war, commerce, and travel. And on commerce, it was only intended to prevent a state from having a regulation that put other states or other merchants from other states at a disadvantage. In other words, you couldn't pass a law in Mississippi to say that Texas could not import boats, right? We couldn't sell boats made in Texas in Mississippi. That's the type of thing they wanted to stop. Or you couldn't give a different tax or a different tariff from products coming in from other states. That's what the Commerce Clause was designed to do. It was never designed to give the federal government the ability to micromanage every transaction made in America, even stuff that didn't cross state lines. So it's been totally distorted. We've got this massive Department of Commerce in Washington, D.C. that is not needed at all. Everyone there should be fired. The whole department should be completely shut down. And this amendment needs to be clarified. And so Mark Levin has a two-paragraph, pretty simple, I think it's two sentences in each paragraph, amendment that he's already drafted that I think the convention should say, yeah, that's a good suggestion. And then the suggestion of that amendment goes back to all 50 states. Each state will debate it in their legislature or at a ratification convention, but they'll probably all do it at the legislature. It's how most amendments have been ratified. And then 38 of those states have to say yes. So if it's a bad suggestion that's made at the convention, I promise you, we can get 13 states to say no. In fact, I don't even have to have 13 states to say no. I just need one chamber in each of 13 states to say no. So the House in all 13 states could say yes, but if the Senate says no, it's dead. So anyway, I don't want to get too far in the weeds. I know I already have, but that's the process. It's just a suggestion convention. And when I realized that, it totally changed my position. So again, 15 years ago, I was ignorant, and I thought, well, I don't want anybody changing the Constitution, or I don't want to give anybody these politicians the chance to amend the Constitution. They might take away the Second Amendment. I had all these typical fears that everybody has when they first hear about this, and that was out of ignorance. And then I got educated, And then I started studying. Okay, what did George Mason say at the Constitutional Convention to convince everybody to support this idea of empowering the states with the power to overrule the federal government? And no one objected. When he put this ability to overrule the federal government into Article 5 for the states, it was a unanimous vote. It was a mic drop moment because they all realized he's right. We've empowered the federal government to do things, and the only way that we can stop them if they get outside of what we empowered them to do is if they decide to give up that power. And human nature says never. No one's ever stolen power and then willingly given it back. Never. And so we've got to have a way for the states to overrule the federal government. That's how convention states got into the Constitution, and that's the tool we can use. That's the only tool, frankly. I'm just going to be blunt with you. We will not save America without this. I'm working on a book right now called The Final Option, and my thesis in the book is that if we do not restore federalism, which is what Mark was talking about, if we don't restore federalism, we are headed to civil war. We will not save the nation. We have to get back to letting each state decide all of those issues on their own, other than those big three: war, commerce, travel. I mean, I'm sure I'm missing a little thing in there in Article 1, Section 8, but basically those big three, right? If we don't get back to that and let the states decide and not the feds decide everything, the answer to that question Mark and I were talking about, who decides, if we don't restore federalism, we're done. So I am convinced that this solution that the founding fathers gave us, that they unanimously voted for. When I say unanimously, folks, that's George Washington, that's James Madison, that's James Wilson, that's Gouverneur Morris. George Mason. I mean, these guys said, let the states have the power to overrule the federal government. Why we haven't done it? Ignorance. It's ignorance. We just don't know how the process works. And out of fear, we say no, because we don't understand it, which is why education is the solution. So you educate everybody on this, which is why I'm encouraging you to go to conventionofstates.com, get signed up, and then educate your family, educate people in your church, or just take one of our Constitution classes, because we do that on this issue in the class. So it'll solve a lot of this. And then over time, we'll get enough legislators that finally aren't ignorant about this and therefore fearful about this. And they will then know, wow, this empowers me. This empowers me as a state rep or state senator. This empowers my state to overrule the federal government. I like that. And they will then support it, and we'll get to 34 states that will then call for the convention, and then we'll have the convention. And frankly, I hope it's not just one convention. I think that every time the federal government does something that's outside the boundaries of what they were supposed to do, boom, you call for a convention of states. The states get together and say, no, we're not going to let you do that, federal government. No, Joe Biden, you do not have the power to tell every local school district in the entire nation that you have to let men go into the girls' locker room and shower. No, Joe Biden, you do not have the power to tell my local school that they have to let some mentally ill male take a shower with my daughter. Not going to do it. And so you have to overrule them. You have to tell them you don't have the power to do this. And right now the states are bumbling around in the dark trying to figure out how to stop this stuff from happening when the solution is right in front of them. It's right there in Article 5. It's right there. They just have to use it. All right, enough about that, man. I could go on about that one for a long time because it's a topic I love, actually, because it's a solution. I hate just talking about the problem. I want to talk about the solution. What do you do about this? What do you do about a federal government that's run amok? What do you do about a multi-trillion-dollar train wreck? What do you do about them putting us, $31 trillion in debt now? Well, you can do something. This is the solution that is big enough for the problem that is massive. And it's time for us to get busy on doing it. Phone number today, 888-589-8840. I haven't even given it out yet today, did I? 888-589-8840. That's the phone number. If you'd like to comment, maybe you got a question, maybe you got an insult, I take them all. So go ahead and call in today, 888-589-8840. Before we go to the break today, I got to tell you, Todd Starnes, friend of mine, love the guy. Great radio program, and also fantastic email alerts all day long. Like, I'm honestly started getting a lot of my heads up when something happens because I don't know how he's doing it so fast or who his team is, but he's getting that stuff out quick when something happens. And but this one is crazy, man. He's been banned from YouTube for sharing, get this, a speech of Donald Trump. Wait a minute, what? Talk about free speech violation. So the lead candidate, remember we talked about this, I think, Monday. Maybe it was yesterday. But we talked about the fact that PBS was not going to run anything of Donald Trump's because that was somehow going to be dangerous speech. Yeah, the lead candidate for president from one of the two major parties, you're not going to cover? If this isn't a violation of free speech, I don't know what would be, but it is. It's a concentrated, I get it, it's government action that is a violation of free speech, but if government is coercing, then it's definitely a violation of free speech. So technically, a news entity not covering something is not a violation of free speech or freedom of the press. They have the right to do that. I get it. Unless the government is telling them not to do it, which is what happened during 2020 and what happened during COVID and what happened with the FBI pressuring big tech to silence people and even major media not to cover certain stories. But all of it, back to Todd Starnes, banned from YouTube, banned, terminated from YouTube for sharing a speech of the former president who is also the leading candidate for president. Unreal, folks. Unreal. YouTube, just get off of there, folks. Just don't even go there anymore. I haven't been completely banned yet. Definitely been put in jail a few times. Now Daily Wire is getting, you know, all of their strikes. In fact, I think they ended up getting banned. Maybe they got back on. I don't know. Use Rumble, not YouTube, okay? Rumble, not YouTube. Got to take a break. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You are listening to AFA. I know it's actually At the Core now, not AFA At the Core. I know. I've been getting it right for months. I suddenly got it wrong. Okay, one strike against Rick. Don't ban me from YouTube over it. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. We'll be back in a moment.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. I'm filling in for Walker today. I know it's Wednesday. I know everybody tuned in today hoping to hear from Walker, and you're disappointed. You're stuck with me, who you can normally avoid if you just don't listen on Tuesdays. All right, I'm kidding. I know you like both of us, and you should like both of us because, you know, it's a good combination. It's like Batman and Robin. I don't know who's Batman. I don't know who's Robin, but it's – anyway, I'll shut up now. Let's go to the phones. 888-589-8840 is the phone number, 888-589-8840. And one more time, by the way, just a reminder on our topic of the first and second segment, conventionofstates.com is the website to help with the movement to save the Constitution and save the country, frankly. And the easiest way to learn how it works and my journey of how I went from being against it to being for it and why so many have done that. Virtually every conservative constitutional scholar in the country has done the same thing. Like, used to be against it, is now for it. Mark Levin started writing his book, Liberty Amendments, determined to speak against a convention of states. And then when he did his homework and he actually studied the founders and he studied how it works and he studied all of that, he ended up completely 180 and became essentially the intellectual godfather of the whole movement for convention of states by writing his book, Liberty Amendments, and actually including 12 amendments that would help to right the ship and overrule a ton of federal action and makes the argument for why this is the solution. So it's really interesting. So if your knee-jerk reaction is, no, let's not do that, trust me, you're not alone. I get it. I felt that way. I totally understand how you feel. And that's where I was. But I found this is the solution once I understood it. And I encourage people to debate it, have conversations. As Patrick Henry said, according to the magnitude of the subject ought to be the freedom of the debate. Only in this way can we arrive at the truth. He's right. He was right on March 23rd, my birthday, by the way. He was right on March 23rd when he gave that speech at St. John's Church and ended it with "Give me liberty or give me death." He was right then, and his words are still right today. According to the magnitude of the subject ought to be the freedom of the debate. So this is a big subject. We're talking about saving the Constitution, saving the country, huge subject. So be willing to discuss it and debate it. Be willing to learn. Be willing to study these things. I think you'll come to the same conclusion I have, that it's absolutely necessary to save the country. Okay, let's get to the phones. Let's see. First-time caller. I'm going to see if I can say this right. I think it's Raquel, not Rachel. Raquel from Virginia. Am I getting that right?
Yes, you are. Thank you, Mr. Green, and thank you so much for standing up for our constitutional republic.
You bet.
Really.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah.
People like you, it takes all of us standing up to uphold the law and uphold the natural order that the Lord designed, right?
Amen.
And the civic government that makes sense.
Yep.
My question is, so I actually initially supported Convention of States and then got concerned because the Marxists are controlling our media. And I realize it's not so easy to pass an amendment to our Constitution, but it would be very easy for them to announce that they've passed an amendment to the Constitution and it be false. I mean, they're liars. They're cunning, and they are always looking. Their action is our reaction, right? This
right.
is that's a Marxist MO. And so are we being pushed into a convention of states as a setup? And do they have a mechanism to take it over and take it hostage?
Good question. Really, really, really good question, Raquel. And first of all, you know, they could announce that now, right? A lie that they've passed an amendment. But I get what you're saying. They would do it under the cover of a convention actually taking place. Here's why I know that it's not a setup and that they're not the ones trying to get us to do it. Every Soros-funded organization is against a convention of states. They know this is the solution that takes away what the Marxists are currently using, which is the media, the courts, the non-constitutional republic methods. In other words, they've been doing an end run around the Constitution, governing around it, shredding it, ignoring it, and this actually restores the Constitution itself. So they hate the idea, but they're so smart, right? They're so smart, and like you said, so dishonest. And so they've even got a disinformation campaign out there where they actually convince conservatives that George Soros is for this and that he's actually funding it, which is a complete lie. And, of course, I know that because I'm so intimately involved with Convention of States and Mark Meckler and the folks that are working on this. It's a complete lie, but you wouldn't believe how many times I hear that's not what you were saying, but how many times I hear specifically that George Soros is funding it and he's going to take over. Absolutely not true. He hates this idea. Anybody that's a leftist hates this idea because they know it's the way to get the decision-making back into the hands of the actual elected representatives and out of the hands of these unelected, unaccountable lawyers in Washington, D.C. And so that's just in terms of who's for it, who's against it, who wants it to happen. That's what I would say. And then to your other question of just the how do you keep them from hijacking it once it happens? And you know, here's the thing. They could hijack any process if they have the political power and muscle to do it, and we let them do it. They've already hijacked a ton of our political processes, but that doesn't mean that we just give up, right? It doesn't mean that we don't use those processes or that we don't vote anymore, or that we don't run people for office. We have to just double down and engage and get more involved, get better funded, get better candidates, and continue to fight. It's the same here. This is just one other area of how a constitutional republic works, and we don't choose not to use the tool because we're afraid someone else might use the tool or that someone else might take over the tool. We just have to do it well. So I don't ever disarm out of fear that the enemy will take my weapon and use it against me. I train to use my arms very effectively. And so some people choose not to carry a firearm, for instance, because they're afraid the perpetrator might take it. Well, of course you should be afraid the perpetrator might take it if you're not trained. And so that's why I train. That's why I encourage other people to be trained if they're going to carry. Exact same thing here. The analogy fits. If you're going to use the Constitution to save the Constitution, you got to train. And so you got to get educated. You got to be knowledgeable about how the Constitution works. You got to train in state legislatures, and you got to train in grassroots to be able to influence what's going to happen at that convention when it takes place. It's one reason we're doing a simulation again. We did a convention state simulation back in 2017 at Williamsburg, and it was incredible. I got to be John Madden. I was like, you know, I was the commentator, so I was drawing on the board. Like, okay, I didn't really do the chalk on the board, but anyway, it was a really, really cool example of essentially practice for how a convention will work, what the amendments would be like, how they would do it, and then we're doing another one this summer in August again in Williamsburg. So that's part of the training, but it's also getting people elected to state legislatures that understand this process and that know how to use it well. And then it's just winning politically. It's just organizing. That's why the grassroots part of this is so critical. So that would be my very long answer to your question. Everything in politics can be used against us, and the other side can always have an opportunity. That's the danger of freedom, right? But I'm okay with that because I want freedom. They can always have the ability to outmaneuver us, outplan, outwork us. And that's what they've done for 80 years. They've been in the trenches scratching and clawing, and they've taken over every major institution in America because we sat on the sidelines and let them do it. In fact, out of fear of engaging in the process, or sometimes out of lies, because we were told as Christians that would make us a Christian nationalist or a dominionist or whatever funny term they can come up with, and so we just checked out. That can no longer happen. So this is just a perfect example of the tools are there, but we have to learn the tools, and we have to use the tools, and we can win. Absolutely, we can win. Now, could the other side win? Maybe, but just do the math. What happens at a convention? The states get one vote each. So it's literally by state that you vote on this stuff. Well, we have the advantage there because we have about 30 states, 33 states really, that think more like us, right? That still have some values, that still have an expectation of liberty principles. And they have, maybe seven or eight of the biggies, right? California, Massachusetts, Oregon. And then there's, seven or eight that are just totally swing, right? Right. And they could go either way. So it depends on who the legislature sends, but they still get just one vote. And so I don't think there's any doubt that we will be able to cobble together 26 votes on all of the issues that we really want to get done at a convention, which are not, by the way, social issues. We're not going to pass a life amendment. We're not going to pass a marriage amendment. We're not going to pass an amendment that has anything to do with the actual, policy issues. They're all going to be process amendments. But that's okay, because process amendments are what the Constitution is really all about anyway. And it just answers the question, who decides? And those process amendments will send the decision-making power back to the states, and then you and I can fight in our individual states on the policy issues, and now we get to decide the policy issues in our state instead of at the federal level. I hope that makes sense. It's a lot of steps there, but in general, what it basically means is the convention is designed to shift power from the feds back to the states, and then you have your fight in each individual states. In each individual state on those issues of, boys and girls sports, all those kinds of things. You won't get 38 states to ratify an amendment on any of the social issues. You just won't. You can't get that much agreement yet. But you can get 38 states to agree on the fact that they want to make the decision themselves for their particular state. You'll even get some liberal states agreeing to that. California may end up voting for amendments that give them the power to decide instead of the feds, because they're afraid of this new Supreme Court. They're afraid of Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh agreeing with Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas on too many things. And so I'm hearing them say, the Supreme Court shouldn't be able to tell us yada, yada, yada. And I'm going, yeah, we said that for 50 years. About time you got on board with freedom, even though your version of freedom is different from mine. So I actually think a lot of those people in the end, once the convention happens, will end up supporting a lot of the amendments that are process amendments. Okay, not a lot of time left today, just a few minutes, but let's try to squeeze in another question. How about Jeff? Jeff, another first-time caller, calling in from Texas. Not too sure about convention of states yet, not convinced. What's your comment or question, Jeff?
Yes. Hi. I'm just phoning in because I'm the first time listener to your show, but I really like it. And I
thank you, man.
A few years ago, when the Convention of States started becoming a debating point, and especially Mark Levin and Mark Meckler and all. I mean, so many people. I mean, I listen to Mark all the time, and I was just really sold on it. But then I started listening to I hate to say it, Frank's speech and especially some of the talk show hosts there that are really against it. And I just want to suggest that these guys get together and really pray about it, because they all love God and they love Jesus and they should be able to discuss it and get a united front.
I would love to have a united front. I mean, I disagree with people of faith all the time on things. So, I mean, that's just human nature, right? But I don't know who do you know? Are there any names you could give me on who's against it that you've been listening to?
Well, Brandon House. He's got most of the news that comes through Frank's speech, and I'm very passionate about the elections and especially that they were stolen and are being stolen.
Yeah.
I really like that part of the whole message that Mike Lindell and Brandon and everybody's.
I hear you, man. And I know Brandon. It's been years since I've talked to him. And I'd be glad to talk to him about this and have just an intellectual discussion. And perhaps he can, after really seeing how it works, have the same same process that I went through, that David Barton went through, that all Mark Levin and all these other conservative constitutional minds have had. My guess is Brandon doesn't really know how this works, and if he did, he would be for it. And that I don't mean that as an insult at all. It's just that most people have a knee jerk reaction to it. And that's why the book I'm writing is, I think, important, because it's going to make the logical arguments and show the details. But I will say, some people just love to be against stuff, and sometimes Brandon falls into that category too. And honestly, Brandon's been very wrong on a lot of the Faith of the Founder stuff. He used to be with us on a lot of that, and he just went, I don't know, just for whatever reason, changed his position on a lot of that stuff. So everybody, I'm wrong sometimes too. So I don't mean that as an insult either. I'm just saying, nobody gets it right all the time, and he absolutely has a right to be wrong about Convention of States. But I would love to have a conversation with him and have the chance to think through those details and see if he would still be against it. Because I have, again, good friends that are against it, and I hope that they come around eventually. It took me time, a couple years really of studying this thing before I finally became for it. Let's see if I can possibly squeeze in one more. This is going to be a tight one, so let's see if we can do this real fast. Neil in Missouri. Neil, I'm going to give you a chance to knock out the last call. We only have about, 100 seconds here. Go for it.
Okay. Simplest solution is the judicial solution. There's only one law book on planet Earth, and that's the Bible. All God's law are right in there. When you go before that black-robed priest of Baal sitting on the bench, and he tells you, thou shalt or thou shalt not, you simply open the law book and say, nope, you're wrong, Judge. Right here. God says it's this way. First Amendment secures our right to do that. And if the people don't stand up and start doing that in these courtrooms nationwide, the country's done for. I don't care how many conventions you come up with. You're never going to solve the problem if the people go back to obeying the laws of God set forth in the Bible.
Well, the part I'll definitely agree with there is that you absolutely have to have morality if you want liberty. And none of these things in the Constitution or our system work without that. That's exactly what Ben Franklin said to Miss Powell, was a republic if you can keep it. They knew we had to be a moral society for it to work. So 100% agree with that, and that's why we work on that too. But you got to work on both. It takes Nehemiah and Ezra. You got to do the spiritual part, but you also have to do the basic community political part as well. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Be back with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to At the Core.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.